ESPNLosAngeles.com, Lakers podcast. You know, Andy, this Kobe LeBron thing.
It's taken off.
It's kind of a phenomenon. On the court, off the court, you know, marketing and puppets and
barroom debates.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of levels to this.
It's like an onion.
One of the interesting things, though, I mean, the two of them together as a phenomenon, though, is starting to go back a long way. Joining us right now on the phone, managing director of Zambezi, a creative agency in L.A., is Chris Rye. You have an interesting perspective on LeBron and Kobe in terms of marketing because you've worked with them for a long time.
Yeah, that's true, you know, and I guess we come at it first, like a lot of folks do, from the fans' perspective, and it's fun. It's fun to see, you know, one versus 1A. We sort of crave that rivalry, but I think, as you guys said, as you peel back the onion a little bit, as a marketer and running an ad agency here that's had the good fortune to work with both Kobe and LeBron, what we see in terms of the blueprint is a combination really of three things that, you know, you can only hope for maybe once in a generation from an athlete. But those, you know, it's number one, it's on-court ability. Number two is a sense of personal style, a high degree of style. And number three is an active and proactive engagement in their own brand and how they're marketed. And it's rare to see those three things combined in any one athlete, much less to see all three in, you know, two different athletes in the same sport at the same time, and it all adds up to Kobe LeBron.
Does that come through in aspects like Kobe being so heavily involved in these viral campaigns, which, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, he's among the biggest, if not the biggest, athletes who does something like this, and it's not particularly common, but it's caught a lot of eyes and attention. Is that part of just him wanting to control how he's seen by people?
I think absolutely. It falls out of that, and that's, you know, a proactive, you know, investment in terms of energy and time into their own brand manifests itself in a lot of different ways. You know, we know that LeBron is invested in LRMR, the group that's at the wheel of, you know, LeBron Inc., and those guys are doing a great job. And Kobe himself is a passive investor in Zambezi, in our company, and we've done a lot of things, you know, with Kobe here. And it also comes to life in an understanding of new media and how it's consumed, and that you see that, you know, when it's creating a viral hit like the Kobe car jump, that's something that can be executed at a nominal investment and distributed essentially for free. It's a way to reach, you know, as broad an audience as possible, and, you know, has almost a zero waste proposition when you're talking about marketing to today's 15 to 24 year old.
And they're funny. I love the car thing. I love the moment where Kobe's on the horse in the ankle insurance commercial is really, truly one of my favorite sight gags in anything.
What strikes me, though, about those ads, and especially with Kobe, who, you know, accurately or however you want to put it, has always been accused of being so image conscious, is you see this goofy side of him, you know, this deadpan, goofy, gopher broke side that I think a lot of people wouldn't expect to see, or, you know, for that matter, seeing Kobe using the internet like that. It seems like he's very forward thinking along those lines.
Absolutely. You know, and we were, you know, my partner here at Zambezi, our creative director, Brian Ford, he and I were, previous to this, we were at Nike's agency, Wyden and Kennedy, up in Portland, where we worked on things like, you know, the LeBrons and, you know, the witness campaign for LeBron, and also had the chance to work very closely with Kobe on a TV commercial called Love Me, Hate Me. And this would have been, you know, I guess, 2005. And at the time, you know, it's a guy who's polarizing for any number of reasons. And this spot went right at the heart of that theory and said, you know, there's people who are going to hate and there's people who are going to love. And what you find is that they're usually right on either side of a razor's edge. Sometimes those keyed up emotions are very close to one another in proximity. But I think you cut to a guy like Kobe these days, and there's a lot of joy. He's kind of a man in full, and a lot of those personality traits that for whatever reason weren't brought into the limelight before, his sense of humor, his self-effacing nature, even some goofiness, as you guys said, is coming out now. And I think it's a byproduct of a guy who's 100% comfortable with where he's at.
Yeah, and we definitely we're going to loop back around to the Love Me, Hate Me commercial because it was such kind of an interesting and watershed moment in a lot of ways for Kobe. And we want to learn a little bit more about those kind of the direction and the future of Kobe, you know, going down the line. He's kind of a big figure around town. But one of the things I'm interested in so much, we get a lot of reaction from people. Oh, the LeBron Kobe thing. It's hype. It's this, it's that, it's whatever. People wonder, you know, where it comes from. One of the things I'm always interested in from your perspective in what you do, when you see something like that, is it, wow, there's something there. Let's bring it to the people. Or do you really pick up the vibe that this is something people are interested in? They want to see these two guys together.
Or that they would react to if we put it in front of them.
Right. They want to see the comparison. How does that work when you're thinking of this sort of thing?
Well, you know, you talk about how does it happen? How does a large scale rivalry, you know, manifest itself in mass media? And it's a lot of different things. You know, number one, back to both athletes and their proactive, you know, attention to their brands. You know, both Kobe and LeBron have aligned themselves with great brands and great products like Vitamin Water or Nike. And those groups do, those brands do a phenomenal job of having their finger on the pulse of pop culture. You know, therefore, it's not a mistake when you see Vitamin Water's The Great Debate. And it's not a mistake when you see Nike go big with the puppets, because it's right on the tip of everyone's tongue anyway. So I think, you know, from that perspective, you could make the argument that it's a creation, but it's what the people want. So it's the chicken and the egg thing, and it always will be.
Have you seen examples of, I mean, when, for example, you know, there was something tried to create out of that draft class with, like, Melo and Wade and some of those other guys? Have you seen people try to construct rivalries that don't work in the way that this one seems to have captured a lot of people?
You know, that's a good question. And I think, I'm going to buy myself some time here, guys, to think of an answer. But, you know, you see things, and if it's not an authentic and evenly balanced rivalry, it's not going to last. You know, it's you talk about, I don't know, for some reason I just thought of Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, which at a time was
sure.
The front page of every newspaper debate. Of course, that fizzles out when one side of the seesaw, you know, can't hold its weight.
Yeah, so, Peyton needs to pick it up.
Don't you think? But so I think it's the public, especially when you talk about marketing to millennials, as brands like Vitamin Water and Nike are doing. They've got a pretty good BS radar. They've got an onboard, built-in BS radar, and it's the quote-unquote rivalry won't last unless it's being borne out on the court and also in people's imagination.
Along those same lines, does that mean that somebody like LeBron, as huge as he is right now and at the top of his game, and really about the only person that can push Kobe in terms of...
Yeah, they're really, I mean, these are clearly the two best players in the NBA.
Even someone like LeBron... There's a ceiling to how long he can go without winning a title before maybe that rivalry doesn't get seen the same way?
You know, I think that might be, it's a combination of, you know, that might be a creation of the media. You know, does your average 16-year-old kid who's a huge NBA fan, is he knocking LeBron for not having a ring yet? I don't know. I mean, maybe. But I think that... You know, the hunger to put metrics against, you know, a rivalry, I think that comes a little bit more from the media side than it does from the fan side. I think the fan, you know, an individual fan has the ability to just enjoy it, enjoy the journey and embrace the moment. And I think it's the sports media maybe that wants to, you know, roll out the tail of the tape and settle the debate. So I don't know, but I do think, you know, it wouldn't hurt the case for some rings to start popping up on the other side, and it's an inevitability. You know, the guy's a phenomenal player. We're looking at probably two top 10 NBA players all time at the same time, you know, in their prime, and it is a lot of fun, and LeBron's going to get his. We're not too worried about that.
You had talked a little bit before about the Love Me, Hate Me commercial, and, you know, we had written about it when it came out. What you know, both from where that that commercial came out of, you know, that notion that Kobe is so polarizing. You know, do you, from where that was to where he is now, how do you see that growth? I mean, do you still see him as a polarizing figure?
That's a good question. I think the short answer is no. You know, we definitely don't see him from a marketing perspective. You know, I would say there was a time where, you know, the relevance was more maybe vertical to basketball, to the world of basketball, and that's where this sort of you know, debate was happening. This love me, hate me stuff. You know, Kobe's a guy who has always been a force of nature in personality and in his game. And, you know, a lot of people love him for it, and a lot of people hated him for it. But I think what's great is he was able to always elicit, you know, an emotional response. And that's what leads you to a commercial like Love Me, Hate Me, which, you know, my partner Brian wrote and actually shot on his own little Super 8 camera and then edited that commercial together while we were at Wieden and Kennedy working on the Nike stuff. So Brian works closely with Kobe on that. And I think, you know, it was right. At the time, it was the right commercial at the right time. And again, here we are, four seasons later, and you're looking as we said at a man in full bloom as an athlete, as a business person, as a family man, and a guy who is no longer, you know, vertically relevant, but broadly relevant, as evidenced by, you know, the Guitar Hero commercial. You know, that's something that we had a lot of fun seeing that come together, and something that is intended to, you know, middle America.
Right. If you mentioned it real quick, you mentioned that BS meter before. If you continue to try to push Kobe as this polarizing guy, this, you know, black hat, white hat, whatever you think, do you think that would set people's BS meter off at this point?
I think it would. I think he's so comfortable and so at such peace with where he is in kind of all phases of his life that it's I think it's outlived its usefulness, really. I do.
One of the things that struck me about the Love Me or Hate Me ad when it came out was as striking as a campaign as it was and just how arresting it was visually, and it was really
and
different.
Much better than anything I ever shot on Super 8.
Right. And you got Sasha lingering in the background, which is, you know, I'm sure what put it over the top. But there's a risk, at least in my mind, in running an ad like that and acknowledging that somebody is disliked and that perhaps you either play into it or you maybe reinforce it, make some people who might have been on the fence go one way. Was that something you guys were aware of, concerned about at all?
Yeah, you know, it was a high wire act. It was a tough brief at the time, and I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the Nike brand, having built a history that embraces a little bit of rebel in their athlete. You know, it's a brand that in the long tradition of a John McEnroe and a Charles Barkley, or even all the way back to Steve Prefontaine, it's a brand that the Nike brand doesn't mind provoking. So I think within the context of that brand, it was the right play and the smart play, but certainly there's some risk involved.
You know, you talked about that working relationship, you know, on a lot of levels with Kobe Bryant. He's changed so much. I mean, you know, come so far in terms of kind of the roller coaster through his life in L.A. And now, you know, champion, you know, they won another ring. He is the unquestioned leader of the team. They certainly seem on a good path to maybe win a couple more titles in the next few years. When you look at Kobe Bryant and the marketing of him and his image and all these things over the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, where do you see him as 36-year-old Kobe Bryant, 38-year-old Kobe? How does he market himself at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think, you know, first of all, what he's done and how he approaches his physical fitness has earned him the right to think about himself as a brand that deep into his career. You know what I mean? Because of the almost like Olympian approach he takes to staying in shape and staying on the court. You know, he at 35 will be like somebody else at 29, you know? In other words, very, very effective on the court. And I think, you know, from our perspective, and I think from those close to continuing to manage Kobe's brand, it'll be continuing on the trajectory that he's on, which is to become and to continue to be the most dominant signature brand in basketball. I also think you're going to see the continued expansion of his brand and the products that he partners with overseas. You know, you're seeing a lot of evidence of that, certainly in Asia, and in other regions as well. So I think, you know, you'll see Kobe's trajectory, you know, continue on that line and you know, in concert with and helping to lead the globalization of the NBA as a game as well.
Chris Rye, managing director of Zambezi, created the creative agency in L.A., works closely with Kobe Bryant's work with LeBron James. We really appreciate you giving us the time today. It's a really unique perspective ahead of what I understand is going to be a fairly watched basketball game on Christmas Day.
It could be one or two people tune into that. Yeah.
I think.
Well, we know of three people, and they're right here talking.
Right. It's weird because we work for ESPN. I still haven't seen any notification that.
Yeah, they really ought to jump on this thing.
I should put that on TV. we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for coming by the show.
Thanks, Brian and Andy. Appreciate it, guys. Best of luck.
Thank you.
You too.